Nashville.
The suit is in the building.
Acknowledge me.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Ready. This is Chase McCabe on Nashville's best sports talk. 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Hour number two, Chase McCabe Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Nick Frazier with you on this Monday. Hope you're having a fantastic start. You can weigh in, 615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I got a text I'm going to get to in just a second on a potential trade the Predators could make. We'll also have your chance to win three-day passes to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix coming up in just a few minutes. So be listening for that. Greg A. on our text line says, Chase, what do you think? Fabro and a draft pick for Brett Pesce. Of course, with Carolina, that's been rumored that the Predators could be in on him. I probably would do that. I mean, if they're going to add to the defense, I mean, they're already – it's already a logjam at defense with the signing of Luke Schenn. They're going to have to move a piece. Now, to me, Jeremy Lauzon is the one that I would look to move. But, you know, he's got, I think, 2 years left on the contract. Pesce is interesting. 28 years old, been there for a while, since 2013, since he was drafted. But he's somebody that, you know, I remember in the bubble series, or not the bubble series, but the COVID year where they played the different divisions in Carolina. You know, they obviously met Carolina in the playoffs. He was a guy that kind of stood out to me. So I would do that. I mean, I like Dante Fabro, and I think towards the end of the year, that was the Dante Fabro that everybody had been waiting to see. I'm also curious of what Andrew Brunette and his staff can do with him, because I feel like that they're going to be able to get more out of Dante Fabro than maybe we've seen over the course of the last few years. Carrier could be the piece that ends up getting moved. Robbie was pointing out this morning he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He's on a one-year deal. Fabro would be an RFA, so maybe that's more appealing to a team to know that you have a little more control there. But I'm curious there. But if they could add Pesce to the fray, I think that's an upgrade. But you got to figure out what to move, because it's a logjam right now at defense with this team. But speaking of the moves, I mean, there's been several. We've talked about, you know, Johansson's gone, Duchesne's gone. Could that be addition by subtraction? You know, time will tell. They signed Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Schenn come in, and then also Gustav Nyquist was signed by the Predators. And, you know, as we talked about with Willie a little bit ago, he was on their show. That was the first time that he had an opportunity to talk to him. He was very impressed by him. I went back and listened. So was I. And, you know, the thing that stood out to me is when he was asked about Nashville style of play and how he can add to that.
Got to Nashville. What was kind of your impression maybe of the environment here in Nashville, or the style of play that the Predators have traditionally played with in the last few years?
Yeah, I think even going back to, I can't remember what year, but maybe 12, 13, somewhere in there. I remember we had a playoff series when I was with Detroit against Nashville. We lost to Nashville in the first round there. Don't quote me on the year, but sometime back then. But always a great building to play in. Game seems to go faster. I think the crowd really helps too. You know, it's a really good atmosphere in this building, and it's always an intimidating place to come in and play. So that'll be fun to be on the right side of that. That'll feel great. So I'm excited to get the season started here.
That was Gustav Nyquist last week on Caroline Willie and D-Mace. And yeah, he referenced that series that with Detroit, and that was, you know, something I was referencing earlier of, it was that changing of the guard that the Predators had gotten through the year before. They'd beaten Anaheim in the first round, and then that year they beat Detroit in the first round, and I think it was Phoenix they ran into the next round and ended up losing. They couldn't solve Mike Smith, but Nyquist remembers that. That was that you know, when Detroit, and really that's when Detroit was, you know, that was kind of the end of their heyday, what they're trying to get back to now. And so he referenced that it's always been a tough place to play. And it has, and we know what Smashville can be. Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette are trying to get it back to that, where, you know, not only is it a tough crowd to play in, I mean, you know, standing ovations, those things, but that the players are bringing that tough, hard-nosed mentality. And I think Nyquist is going to add to that. I mean, Nyquist, to me, is such a, you know, at this point in his career, is such a Barry Trotz type player of that, you know, maybe he's 33, going to be 34. He's certainly on the back nine of his career, but he had 11 goals last year, 27 points. Okay, the numbers don't blow you away by any means, but you're not asking them to. I mean, you're not asking him to come in here and be a 20-goal scorer anymore. He hadn't been a 20-goal scorer since 18-19, which is when he left Detroit. You know, and that's okay. Again, I'm not asking him to do that at this point. They do have to figure out where the scoring is going to come from. You know, Philip Forsberg, I think he's going to be more determined than you've ever seen him, because he basically lost half the season because of the concussion and was out. I think he's going to try and get back to where he was the year before and being a 40-goal scorer, because to me that was not that was not an anomaly. He can be a 40-goal scorer. He's got to stay on the ice, got to stay healthy, and then he's got to stay consistent. Phillip's always been a little bit of a streaky player, which, again, is okay as long as the good streaks are coming more than the bad streaks. But, I mean, think about how many times, you know, we talk about February, where he would just – they'd come in buckets, you know, and that's exactly what I think they're trying to get him back to. But then what else? Who else is going to score? You know, Ryan O'Reilly is not necessarily that guy. He had 16 goals last year. You know, he's last time he was a 20-goal scorer was 21-22 with St. Louis. You know, so he's a little bit older. You know, if you can get him back to 20, that'd be great. But what's Evangelista going to be? What's Parsonen going to be? Time is still going to tell, because those are two very, very young players. They got to figure out where some of the scoring is going to come from, and it can't all be Philip Forsberg.
Yeah, and, you know, mentioning Parsonen and Evangelista, with those names, and if they develop to the potential that they have shown mm-hmm. throughout last season, I think that'll open up more opportunities for Forsberg to get back to that
yeah.
prime form of his goal-scoring abilities.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can somewhat equate it to, if the Titans add DeAndre Hopkins, then all of a sudden that changes the way a defense looks at the offense.
Because absolutely.
If you have Treylon Burks, DeAndre Hopkins, Derrick Henry, Chigakonkwo on the field all at the same time, you obviously can't focus on all of them at one time. Just like, you know, let's use Luke Evangelista as an example. If Evangelista turns out to be a 25-30 goal scorer, which I don't know if that's his potential or not, but let's say it happens, well, yeah, that is going to make it harder to throw all of your focus onto Forsberg. Obviously, hockey's different because you have different lines and they're not on the ice at the same time, but that's certainly the one way to look at it, and that's what their hope is, that some of these guys develop into that. They got to find that next bona fide goal scorer. And it's been a while before, you know, since they've really been able to find, they've never been able to find an elite goal scorer in their history. Forsberg, I would say, is the closest that they've come to that. They signed Paul Kariya, you know, in the back end of his career. And, you know, he still holds some records, obviously, and did a tremendous job, but he wasn't the same Paul Kariya that we saw in the Anaheim Ducks documentary that's out right now from E60. So they got to find that dude and the next dude. And, you know, maybe Matthew Wood can become that, their first round pick that they took this year. But that's going to take some time. Forsberg needs help, though. And that is ultimately and they may not solve that this year. You know, Barry Trotz has said multiple times that it's going to be a process. It's going to take a while. You can't fix it all in one offseason. It's going to hurt a little bit. It's going to be a little bit of pain. And I think what he meant by that, we're now seeing of the fact if you go to capfriendly.com and you look at how much dead money they have that's going to Johansson and Duchesne. Yeah, that hurts because you're admitting it. You're admitting defeat from that point, but you're also doing it for the greater good as you move forward and make this a better team. So time will tell. That is for sure, and we'll have a lot of time. And I don't think they're done yet.
Either. No.
I don't think they're done by any means with some of these moves.
That was the next thing I was going to ask you is, well, where could the Preds go next in this frenzy of, you know, free agency?
I think the Pesci trade is interesting. That could be on the list. You know, now that DeBrincat is done, you can move on from that. That, you know, okay, DeBrincat's not coming here. You know, could he still strike up a deal for, you know, another winger, another forward that, you know, can add goal production? I mean, because if they had made the move for Alex DeBrincat, then, you know, that would have been the best. That would have been what I'm talking about. You know, that elite goal scoring forward. They're not going to be able to do that now. So I don't know if there's another move that, you know, he's looking at. Some more depth moves. That's kind of where I think it's going to go, is there'll be a, you know, more depth pieces that are added, but I don't think they're done. So
yeah,
it'd be just something to kind of pay attention to.
Okay, noted. Yeah, I was just curious because, you know, all the guys that Barry's brought in, and a lot of people are probably paying more attention to what the production will be on the ice. For me, I look at it where it's going to be like off the ice and in the locker room. All these veteran pieces he's brought in, I feel like is going to help the Preds in the long run for the maturity aspect of the younger players to help them, I guess, be more of the professionalist type, you know, aspect of the game, if you know what I'm getting at. Be more professional off the ice, in the locker room, and carry yourselves with, you know, this better mm-hmm. aspect of the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 615-737-1025. That is the phone number and what you will need to be caller number 5 right now to win a pair of 3-day passes to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix at Nissan Stadium August 4th. Through the 6th, caller number 5, 615-737-1025 will win those 3-day passes right now. Coming up next, we get back into the Titans. Should Titans fans be worried if Kansas City can somehow make some cap room? We'll discuss that coming up next here in Chase McCabe, 1025, 106.3 The Game.
You know, I guess in the Patriots.
Means they offered more money.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, it's basically it. How do you view that at this point and where this might go?
My view hasn't changed. I still think he's signing with this team. I still think it's been this team's plan all along. I think if he signs with the Patriots, he's crazy. And look, if he does sign with a team like Kansas City, you know, it's going to be for far less money. And I think, you know, I think he's holding out hope that maybe one of those elite teams sneaks in there. But I don't think that's going to happen, and I think at the end of the day, he's going to sign with this team, and he's going to be there. I mean, that's just what I believe. Do I believe it 100%? No. You know, at least 100% till it happens. But if I had a large pile of chips in front of me, I would push a large percentage of them out front.
Corey Curtis, News 2 on Robbie and Rex Road earlier today. He put a large sum of his chips. Are they fake chips? I'm going to assume they're fake chips, Corey. But he would slide those in on D-Hop coming to Nashville. I agree with him. I mean, I think with what is available right now, with the teams that, you know, have shown interest, which it appears to be the Titans and the Patriots, the Titans are certainly the best fit. Now, Kansas City, they would change the game. If I'm him, I get it. Like, and we'll talk to Jonathan Hutton about this coming up in about 10 minutes. When he joins the show, you know, I would understand if all of a sudden, and for the way that Kansas City can do this is Chris Jones is probably going to get a contract extension before it's all said and done. He's due for one. He deserves one. And if they do that, then they can manipulate the salary cap, move some money down the road, and then open up a little more cap room. And then they might be able to pursue DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know what D-Hop is wanting. I know that the Titans have been aggressive. I don't know what that means. I don't know how much they've offered. You know, so it could still be a scenario where Kansas City comes along and they're like, hey, look, we can't offer you what Tennessee or New England's offering you, but we're the Chiefs. We just won the Super Bowl. you can play with Patrick Mahomes. If that's what he cares about, then I wouldn't blame him. I'd get it. I would totally understand it. I would hate it, obviously, you know, for us here in Nashville, but I would get it. But I also don't think – I think if he was truly ring-chasing, then he would have jumped on with Kansas City or Buffalo or, you know, whatever already for, you know, what – for no money.
Yeah, exactly. Like a one-year deal for, right. Like – I wouldn't say league minimum, but like $1 or $2 million, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like he would have. It wouldn't have been about the money,
right?
Yeah. So, I don't think it's that. I don't think he's ring chasing. I think he wants to get paid. Now he wants to be on a competitive team, and I think the Titans, even as currently constructed, would be more competitive than the Patriots because I think he got a better quarterback. I mean, I don't think Mac Jones is a very good NFL quarterback.
Right there with you.
And say what you want about Ryan Tannehill. And yes, he has – we'll go back to Cincinnati until – forever, until the end of time, unless he somehow wins a Super Bowl for this team. Everybody will always bring up that game. I get it. He's not perfect. But if you're Hopkins and, you know, this is an offense that you're familiar with, it's a head coach that you're familiar with, it's an offensive coordinator that you're familiar with – I look at the quarterback and I go, yeah, I think I could do some things with that guy. And, you know, even at his age where maybe you look at DeAndre Hopkins and go, well, he's not in his prime anymore, he's still pretty damn good.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is, if you look at, like, I don't want to compare it to A.J. Brown, but if you look at old tape of A.J. Brown with sure. Ryan Tannehill, there are a few plays where Tannehill just throw it up in the corner or throw it to the sideline. There are just a lot of similarities in route patterns with D-Hop that could be compared to A.J. and D-Hop, you know, side by side. So that would be a good way to kind of look at a sample size of what D-Hop could be with Ryan Tannehill. If you're a Titans fan listening, you're like, I wonder what it could look like. Well, there you go. Get some similarities. Try to piece that together in your brain, and that's what it could look like.
Yeah, Mike Reese, who is the one that reporting, and he covers the Patriots for ESPN, does a fine job. He, in his little blog, he had two things on D-Hop. According to sources close to the situation, the Titans and the Patriots have made offers. The Titans have been more aggressive to this point, and Hopkins hasn't been in a rush to sign. One reason for Hopkins to wait a bit longer is to leave open the possibility of another team entering the mix, potentially increasing his market. He goes on to say, D-Hop's incentive, if it remains between the Titans and the Patriots, one question Hopkins might have to ask himself is which team gives him a better chance to cash in on incentives and maximize his earnings. Given his proven production in Bill O'Brien's offense from their time together with the Houston Texans, perhaps that would give New England an edge. They're going to run the same offense. Tim Kelly ran that offense. It's going to be the same. So if you're saying that, oh, you know, working with Billy O, who he did not get along with towards the end, let's think New Englanders and people that cover the Patriots want to forget and gloss over that.
Thank you for clarifying that, by the way. There are people that are just out there thinking, oh, no, it's all good, roses and all you up. No, it was not.
No. Now, have they probably moved on? Yeah. I mean, in this league, you got to have thick skin. You got to move on. I mean, if he truly just held this grudge against Bill O'Brien and it didn't want anything to do with him, he wouldn't have taken the visit. You know, even though Belichick is the top dog and, you know, he's the one that you got to worry about in New England, I mean, he wouldn't have taken the visit. And so he did. So, but certainly isn't a thing to gloss over by any means. But he's going to run the same thing basically here in Nashville with Tim Kelly.
Absolutely. And, you know, with Tim Kelly, a lot of people don't realize this as well. When he was in Houston, he ran a lot of, like, and it's from my perspective looking at it, there were a lot of, like, crossing routes that I saw with Houston that I thought it's kind of undervalued, and especially when you have guys like Chig and then the new draft pick that the Titans got from Cincinnati, Wiley, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
The tight end.
Yeah. I mean, combining those two with some crossing routes up the middle or some seam routes, one or the other, and kind of put Kyle Phillips back in the mix and maybe Colton Dowell kind of surprises some people. This team has a lot of potential, and I don't like to use the word if, but really, if they could get things together, this could be a top one to two team in the AFC South.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a lot of things that gotta come together. I mean, the offensive line scares me,
right?
You know, even though I wasn't super impressed with Nicholas Petit-Frere in his rookie year, he was still a rookie, so the hope was that you would see him, you know, advance in year two, and the hope is after the 6-game suspension, he can still do that. You know, I get it. I get the rules. I do think that the NFL needs to look at some things when it comes to the punishment that they hand out. Like this kind of suspension, like, okay, he broke a rule. And so, yes, he should sit out 6 games. But I don't like the barring him from the facility. You know, that's the thing that especially with a young player, that in a situation like this, I just think they should look at that, where he should be allowed to practice. I know he can do training camp and play in the preseason and all that. When the regular season starts, he can't.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is just, I think, detrimental to the player. I get that you're teaching them a lesson and they broke a rule, but I think that's something that the players in the league should get together on and look at.
Yeah, you know, I was chirping about this on the Saturday show, not this past Saturday, but in recent Saturday shows with Nick and Junie, is that the NFL should go case by case with these gambling incidents and or like steroid incidents. Like, for example, when D-Hop had his steroid situation, yeah. He had, what, half a season, right, or 4 games, something like that? 6 games, 6 or 4
I think
games?
It was four.
Four, okay. Four. And then you got guys that are, for example,
Juan had that too.
Yeah, and then you have Calvin Ridley, who gets suspended for, what, a whole season for the gambling situation?
Yeah.
And you have now Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, who is suspended for, what, 6 games?
Six games.
Now, with all that being said, I think the NFL really does need to crack down and look at things case by case, because I do think it is a bit unfair to people that are, you know, a rookie or a sophomore into the NFL seasons, and they don't have a lot of experience. It's just a downfall.
Yeah. No, and the whole gambling conversation, I mean, that's one that's not going away, and obviously they need to adapt. I mean, they're using the rules that have been in place for years, and I think it's just a different time, so they need to adapt. And I'm sure they'll get there eventually, but, you know, like, yeah, I think the NFL sometimes is like any, you know, entity. It takes them a minute to go, oh, yeah, maybe we should kind of change some things, but we'll talk to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, about all of this, including D-Hop, his latest opinion with that. We'll do that next here on the Chase McCabe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Nick Frazier hanging out on this Monday. Every Monday at 10:30, we get to talk to, he might have the best voice in radio, Jonathan Hutton from Outkick is with us now. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Hut, what's up, my friend?
Chase, not much. We had a great weekend, and great to be on the show, officially the Chase McCabe Show, which is really cool. Not just the suit, you wear many hats, and congratulations on the newest one.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, good to have you on and continue this, because I enjoy these chats on Monday. I feel like we've been – it feels like about 2 months now we've been talking about DeAndre Hopkins and whether he could be a fit for the Titans. I think we've all come to our conclusions on that at this point. But Mike Reese of ESPN reporting over the weekend that the Titans had been aggressive in their pursuit – of DeAndre Hopkins, that they have presented him with a contract, as have the Patriots, but the Titans have been more aggressive. What exactly does aggressive mean to you when it comes to the Titans and their pursuit for Hopkins?
I take that to mean, Chase, that both sides are, both teams are fairly close on the actual earned money part of this, okay? The money that is guaranteed, the money that if he, you know, starts week one on the active roster, he's going to receive. The aggressive nature of, and Mike Reese would certainly know, he's as connected as anyone across the league, the same way Jim Wyatt was when he was at the Tennessean. Chase, I take it to mean there's more incentives in this contract, more aggressive, meaning easier to obtain. Hopkins has been a 1,000-yard receiver 6 of the 8 years that we've seen him play. He was very successful in Bill O'Brien's offense. He also was traded by Bill O'Brien to Arizona and screwed up what was a good thing between him and Watson at the time. I'm surprised that he's considering that, but at the same time, I'm surprised there are only two teams that are really chomping at the bit to sign him. I think Kansas City can make a late move, and they're certainly keeping tabs. That makes sense if you want to go win. But here's the thing that comes, I think it comes down to, not just it comes down to money. Yes, that's number one. But how he's going to be used, the vision and as to why you need him on your roster, and how he's going to be treated, which would be like a number one and a half receiver here in Nashville. And in same thing would go in Foxborough. But look, the reasons as to why you want to sign him, he's still a top 20 receiver in yards per game over the last two seasons. He instantly becomes the most productive pass catcher on the Titans offense easily. And you pair that with what the defense was a year ago, and you start to think, okay, maybe, you know, we're closer to being extremely competitive than we are on the rebound or on the rebuild. We'll save that for 2024 when a lot of these contracts are up. But it's unusual to have a guy come in at age 31, Chase, and produce at the high level that he would be expected to produce, not just with the Tennessee Titans, because we've seen a number of wide receivers come through the doors only to be closer to the end of the career than their prime. But there are only a handful of players, 23 players, that have 4,000 yards receiving over or past the age of 31 in the history of the league. 23 receivers over 4,000 yards after they turn the age of 31. Larry Fitzgerald, Tim Brown, Steve Smith, Tony Gonzalez, I'm counting as the 23. Derek Mason is one of them.
Yeah.
Jerry Rice. It's extremely hard to do. And, you know, I look at it as he's a number two receiver in this offense because they need their go-to player to be on the opposite side of him and Treylon Burks. Personally, I don't mind being aggressive on incentives. I wouldn't go much further ahead of where New England is, and Kansas City's waiting in the wings too to make an offer. So who knows? But this Titans team, what does this one player do? That's what I would have to ask myself. And what it does is it impacts moments in games. This guy's going to score touchdowns in games. I take that as a good thing because the Titans didn't have many guys that got into the end zone last year.
Jonathan Hutton is with us from Outkick, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. You bring up Kansas City. That's the team that I think everybody, Titans fans should be concerned with because they're going to likely extend Chris Jones at some point. If they do that, they can move money around, and then all of a sudden they're probably in the mix. And if you're Hopkins and you can get the money that you're looking for and jump on an immediate Super Bowl contender, that's what I would do if I was him. How concerned do you think Titans fans should be that Kansas City could truly get in the mix?
They were always – I think they've always been in the mix, though. They were one of the teams rumored for a possible trade for Hopkins along with the Bills. And then he became a free agent, and the market dictated exactly what is playing out, which he's going to have to choose the best option. And, I mean, within a couple – I say a couple, it's a lot of money, but a couple million dollars here or there, and he's made a ton of money through his career. The offers will be virtually the same team to team because no one's going to break the bank unless they have to. I wouldn't negotiate against myself, for instance. Point being, Hopkins joining Kansas City is viewed differently by the national pundits and across the league than with New England or Tennessee. It's just how it is based on Kelsey and the receiving core, but ultimately Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. But they need him as much as the other two teams we've been discussing, at least in my view. They've got Valdez-Scantling, Kadarius Toney, who they brought in through a trade last year, and Sky Moore. Those are their top three receivers. And Richie James is there, former, by the way, Go Blue Raiders, yep. Go Big Blue.
Go Blue.
But it's Kelsey making up plays in the dirt, and it would be Mahomes scrambling and finding Hopkins down the field after getting some time in the pocket. In theory, that's the best fit, and in theory, that's how he goes and puts up yards and becomes a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Talking to Jonathan Hutton from Outkick. Now, the Titans are going to be without Nicholas Petit-Frere for six games because he violated their gambling policy. He didn't bet on the NFL, but he bet on something within the team facility. That is a no-no. you know, for sure. And now we've seen guys, you know, Calvin Ridley obviously coming off a year-long suspension because he did bet on the NFL. The rules, in my mind, are black and white. Now, there are things that I think they can look at and maybe adapt to because a lot of these rules were put in place before the app-based gambling and, you know, is there are different set of rules for the players and there are like an employee for the team. So a lot of things they can look at. But where are you on all of this right now? Because this is obviously a situation that isn't going to go away anytime soon.
You're right. Look, I believe the handful of players, but it's not that many players that are getting popped for this. I'm surprised by it. I think it's more difficult to find these accounts and these bets than what it may look like based on the reports where a player's being reported as to making a bet and being suspended in some case. You know, it feels like every week there's a different player. It's like 10 players or something like that. It's not a big number. Two things that come to mind, Chase. Number one, this is a great example of the NFLPA being the weakest players association across the major sports in America. Six games is far too punitive for a player who is making a legal bet, but is doing so potentially while pulling into a parking lot and they hit the Wi-Fi within the facility, sitting in his car in a getting off of a plane on a Saturday in a legal state where sports betting is allowed through your phone and making that bet because you just came from a place where you couldn't do it and you want to bet on your college football team or the UFC pay-per-view that night, whatever. To me, that's no harm, no foul. Where they get, and I think it's certainly, I think it's fair, is betting on the NFL. That should be the black and white rule. Yep. You're betting on the league or you're not. And anything underneath the league umbrella counts as that. That's number one. But the NFLPA is the weakest. There's so many different examples. But going back and reading, and I believe it was Florio last year, they, you know, the comparisons made about, we'll use Hopkins being suspended six games for violating the drug policy, the PED policy. Doesn't matter if he got a tainted, contaminated batch of Tylenol that was mixed into a tub that previously had HGH, whatever. Not going to matter really all that much. You're going to get four games, even if it's lightened on your suspension if you appeal. And it's normally between four to six games based on your first violation. That seems far worse than betting on the NBA finals. And it doesn't just seem that, it is. But the reason why they're the same is the NFLPA allowed this. The NFLPA collectively bargained that drug policy for first offense, second offense, third offenders, you can be suspended or would be suspended up to a year, possibly two full seasons. That's written in the collective bargaining agreement, the CBA. In this case, based on what Florio wrote last year, the PA told the league, make up your policy. We're cool with it. You come up with a policy and enforce it. They didn't even negotiate the suspension length. That's on the Players Association for being the patsies of the National Football League. That's what they do. And Demoris Smith's on his way out. They point to the 2011 lockout and the holdout and all that with the negotiation and some big victory. The victory here is both sides, the players and the owners, are getting a ton of money in revenue by doing this. And there was so much money involved, Chase, that the PA just said, hey, we want to go ahead and get this going and as soon as possible throughout the league. Come up with your own policy for how you want to enforce betting by players. And that's what they did because the players are the only ones underneath the roof of any NFL facility who are allowed to place a bet or step foot into a casino, even on their own time. Everyone else cannot bet on anything, and the players can within these guidelines. By now, they should know the rules, all of them. But Chase, think about it from this angle. If I'm an agent, I am stressing this rule, this policy. I'm not just sending an email. If I'm a team, if I'm a coach, I'm worried. I mean, the guys that have been reported and suspended are not detrimental to a roster. I'm eager to find out what happens when a quarterback or a star running back or a star receiver goes down for six games for betting on UFC 290 this past Saturday night.
Right.
But they just happened to do it after some treatment at a facility. That's when I'm eager to find out if the GMs, the head coaches, and the owners are really going to point back to, oh, we're suspending, we're releasing this player for the integrity of the sport and the league. Well, let's see Chris Ballard do that with someone that matters on that Colts roster.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's a conversation, like I said, that's not going to go away. I think it's ridiculous that if you're a regular team employee and you're in the travel party, whatever, and you can't even go to a casino and play blackjack. I mean, what is that going to do? I don't understand
that. They're doing that. They don't want the perception that guys are losing money based on the fact that they flipped their gambling policy.
Right.
But whatever. I mean, guys can blow their money on literally anything they want to. And, you know, the other side of this, just briefly, to me, 1 year, betting on the league, 1 year seems reasonable. It seems very punitive. And these guys, especially some of the guys that are on the end of their first term of their contract, you know, they're being released with a year left. We saw that happen in Indianapolis. Well, the year is almost taken as like, okay, apply for reinstatement. Calvin Ridley, you're good. You're back in the league.
Right.
What happens if this comes up in baseball? Hypothetically, if Ronald Acuna is betting on Major League Baseball on an app, what happens and how is he suspended? Is he banned for life the way Pete Rose is? Or is he treated more like an NFL player would based on the era that we're in? And that makes the argument for Pete Rose, if so.
Oh, I think it 100% does. That's a great question. That is a fantastic question. And
how does Rob Manfred handle that versus the way Goodell is handling? Goodell and the NFL are very upfront. They've got these companies, these businesses reporting back on who's betting, and they're suspending them and they're releasing statements and doing all this stuff. Meanwhile, I haven't heard a peep about this in Major League Baseball.
I haven't either.
And there's no doubt that every sport has players that are doing this, but the way Major League Baseball has treated this, just look at Rose. He is a pariah. Like he's applied for reinstatement. You know, he admitted to gambling on the Reds, doing all this, and he's still treated like he has leprosy or something, right? Like he's shunned, even though it's been more of an open door situation in recent years for throwing out the first pitch or whatever. Vastly different treatment compared to how, just as a general sports public, we view the suspensions in the NFL.
Very, very good stuff. Good to have you on. Good to be back, and we'll do it again next week.
Yeah, and we could say the same for the PED policy, by the way. Guys can't get in the Hall of Fame in baseball. Hopkins is back in a month and a half. You know, so again, it's very intriguing. Chase, always enjoy the chats, man, and we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Jonathan Hutton from OutKick. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow is the show, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. I have some more thoughts on that when it comes to betting. We'll do that coming up next. Chase McCabe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
So I handed him my bottle, and then he drank down my
Well done, Nick bottle. Fraser. Chase McCabe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe and Nick Fraser. Closing things out, appreciate Jonathan Hutton for joining us. Here's my quick thought on something that he just brought up, because he's right. You haven't heard a peep from Major League Baseball on this. I mean, I can't – I do not believe that a baseball player has not placed a bet on baseball since all this has become legal in a lot of states and it's app-based, and you can't convince me that that hasn't happened. But we don't. If it has, we don't know about it. And if they know about it, they're not telling anybody, or they're just pretending that they don't know about it. And here's why. This is my opinion. They don't want to have to address Pete Rose. Because while I agree from a strictly baseball standpoint, at this point, Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame.
100%.
He's the hit king. Pete Rose is not a good dude, okay? That's the reason that he's not in the Hall of Fame. It's because he's there's a lot of things that maybe he's done and maybe he hasn't that are questionable. And I think even though baseball has cracked the door open for him a little bit, I know he's in the Reds Hall of Fame, and he's been allowed at some parks and all of the, I mean, you've seen him at Reds games and stuff. And And look, I've met Pete Rose. That was it was cool. It's like, oh wow, this is the guy, the hit king. I know why they're not letting him in, because he's not a great person. Okay, fine. And so they're waiting for him to die, then they'll put him in because he doesn't get to enjoy his moment. That's whatever. From a baseball standpoint, I don't agree with that. But with this, if let's say, and we're going to not use a member of the Atlanta Braves, but if Pete Alonso, you know, all of a sudden it comes out that he bet on a Mets game and they got to do something about it, because they would have to. They can't ignore it. They would have to do something about it, because their policy is you cannot bet on baseball. Pete Rose got a lifetime ban. Well, are they going to give Pete Alonso a lifetime ban? Probably not.
Exactly.
They're going to suspend him for a year, probably. Well, if you do that, then all of a sudden everybody's going to go, okay, cool. So is Pete in?
Yeah.
Is the ban lifted? So I do kind of wonder if they're just, you know, ignoring. And I don't like Rob Manfred. I think he's the worst commissioner in sports. I wonder if they're just kind of turning their back and ignoring it, because then they don't have to address the Pete thing.
Yeah, and you know, the thing with the whole Pete Rose thing, and he mentioned Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, yeah, that guy is going 40.
We're not doing that.
I know. I'm sorry. But I'm just saying, if you have the biggest name in baseball doing that, like,
right,
that could become an issue. And you're thinking, exactly, for the whole Pete Rose situation, like, 100% should be in the Hall of Fame, no questions asked.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. That Hutton brought up baseball, because you're right, they seem to be quiet when it comes to all of this right now. Speaking of, this is what a segue. Speaking of baseball, the home run derby tonight, and usually I would give out best bets. I like Vlad Guerrero to win it tonight. He's plus 400. Alonso is the favorite at plus 300. What a transition. But I like Vladdy Jr. Luis Robert is plus 525. Julio Rodriguez is plus 550. Mookie's plus 1200. And you know, you might dabble a little bit on Mookie. I love that. But he's got to go up against Vladdy in the first round. And that's, to me, that's going to be tough. So
it is.
I like Vladdy.
Yeah, I'm actually going the opposite way. I'm actually going Mookie Betts to win it all. That was my
really?
That was my pick to click with Willie and all them on their show. Take it to the bank, excuse me.
Okay.
And you know, I just think with the home run derby currently, you gotta have like a fast swing pattern.
Yeah.
Because you have Adolis Garcia, Mookie Betts, Julio Rodriguez, all those guys can hit the ball quick, and it's all time. Like, and don't get me wrong, like Vlad and Pete, like they definitely got the swing pattern down, but I don't know. I just think the more hefty hitters are gonna have a little bit of a downfall.
It also depends on who's throwing to you.
Correct.
I mean, a lot of these guys will use like a longtime, you know, BP coach, but some will bring in like their dad, and you know, the rhythm's off, and you know, so I'd be curious of that. You know, you got to have the right person throwing to you in it too. I like the home run derby. I don't really care about the All-Star game anymore. I mean, All-Star games in general just don't do it for me. But the home run derby's fun.
I will say this little tidbit about Mookie Betts. He is a Yuna baseball product. A lot of people don't know in Nashville, Yuna used to be a baseball area. Now it's Yuna Bears for football. Yes, I am a part of that Yuna baseball era. So, yeah, Mookie grew up in the Yuna area for baseball. And now, hey, look at him now in the pros doing a home run derby.
Music City Betts tells me they were going with Randy Arozarena.
It's not a bad pick. That is not a bad pick.
Plus 1050 on the Superbook Sports app. So, there you go, Rick. Good luck with that. I'm going Vladdy, and we'll see how it all shakes out. Real quick, I wanted to get to this. We referenced it earlier during the Pulse, but Ellie De La Cruz has been so much fun to watch since his debut with the Reds. Check out what he did this weekend.
Guerrero, high leg kick coming to the plate. He'll steal third base. Ellie De La Cruz will, without even a throw. In fact, the third baseman, Brian Anderson, didn't even go. Now he's coming home, and he's safe. They threw the ball back to the pitcher. He fell asleep with the ball in his glove, and De La Cruz took off from third base into home, and he steals home while the pitcher tries to unload the ball to the plate. Couldn't get it to the catcher in time, and De La Cruz has simply stolen a run all by himself.
How about that?
How about that, indeed? That from the Reds Radio Network. Elly De La Cruz, I mean, I've made the comparison that he reminds me when Ronald Acuna made his debut for the Braves, that, you know, just a personality, different type player, but so gifted. And the fact that he stole three bases in one inning and then came home and stole home, literally stole a run, is just crazy. And, you know, the Reds might be the most fun to watch in baseball right now.
They could make a deep run at it. I'm just saying, they add could. 1 to 2 pitchers at the trade deadline, they could be contending for something.
They could indeed, for sure. That is going to do it for us. Thanks so much for playing along with us. Coming up next, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. They'll have the latest on the D-Hop hunt and how aggressive the Titans can be for him. That's all next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.